Network Automation Nerds Podcast.
Hi, guys. In this episode, I talked to my friend Daniel Teshny about content creation, the general workflow, why he wants to create content for the general public, choosing the right medium, and I hope you enjoy this episode. See you there.
Hello, and welcome to Network Automation Nerds Podcast, a podcast about network engineering, network automation, Python, and a host of technology topics. I'm your host, Eric Cho. Today on the show, we will be talking to Daniel Teshny. Daniel is based out of Melbourne, Australia, so he's actually ahead of me in time, and he works as a network automation engineer. The last time I checked out Daniel's GitHub page, he had over 200 commits and 242 PRs in 2022 alone. So, you know, and this is only March. So I feel like this is the right place for him to talk about his work, his passion, his blog, and whatever he has in mind. So welcome to the show, Daniel.
Thank you, Eric. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, I feel like, you know, with the amount of work that you put out, you should be hosting this show, right? What am I doing here?
Yeah, bit too busy for that. But yeah, I'm really grateful to be on here. And yeah, it's real honor in terms of I've been following your work for a while, and I actually bought one of your first books, and that was something that really accelerated my learning, but we'll probably get into that later on.
Yeah, well, appreciate it. You know, I think the first book in terms of sales volume is I want to say it's about quarter to, if I'm being generous, it would be about a quarter of the third edition sales. So I appreciate your early endorsement and early support for that first edition.
Yeah, it was a great book. I mean, at the time, you know, I think you released it in 2017, and
yeah,
funnily enough, I heard, you know, the first time that I heard about you was on a Packet Pushers podcast when you were promoting the book.
Yeah,
and I was cycling around the local neighborhood, and you know, I was really engaged with what you were talking about. So, got home and purchased the book, and it really helped me accelerate my learning, because at the time, you know, we're in 2022 now, but you know, there wasn't the proliferation of content that there is at the moment. Right. So there were very, very little books going into it. And what I enjoyed most about the book was there was a lab to go with it. So it wasn't abstracted, or it wasn't something unrelatable, and you could work through the exercises and understand the content. And yeah, I think, on behalf of me, but I guess everyone, like, you know, it's great that you continue to produce content and help people out. And I probably wouldn't be here today without going through your book and learning things and, you know, adopting a different mindset.
Yeah. Thanks, man. I mean, just for the record, we didn't set this up, right? Like, I didn't pay you to endorse my book or anything like that.
You did, didn't you? Check's not in the mail.
No. No. Yeah, it's in the mail.
I'm very sincere about what I'm saying.
Yeah. I don't know what the cool kids are doing right now, but you know, like those mobile apps to send you money or whatever. Like, you know, you'll get that in a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, I've been following you and on your Twitter and your blog and a few of your podcast presentation. You mentioned Packet Pusher and also The Art of Network Engineering. I think both of them were great. I will put, you know, links in the show notes about how you progress as a network engineer. It was especially inspiring on how you went from like a service help desk, and you were being very proactive about what you want to do and purposeful about your projects and what your next steps are. I think a lot of us could learn a lot from just listening to your path and how you approach things.
Oh, thanks, Eric. That's, yeah, really kind words. Yeah, I think if I just sort of just talk about myself just for a moment.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a lifelong learner. So, you know, I think if I was doing any job and I wasn't learning something new, whether it's something, you know, very small or very large over, you know, a period of days or weeks or months, I don't think that as an individual I'd be satisfied or engaged. So, you know, taking that mindset of being a lifelong learner and having a growth mindset and always being open to learning you know, more effective or efficient ways to do things is something that stood me well in my career to this point. And also, you know, brings purpose because you're always challenging the status quo in anything that you do, and you're always looking to get better. And I think taking the approach of, you know, every day you're trying to work on your craft or your mastery of certain topics is probably a good approach to take, and continuously looking to adapt and evolve, and also just being open to, you might think that the solution to a problem is well known and you understand it and, you know the best way or the best practice to do so, but always being open to hearing other people's thoughts and opinions and perspectives, because I've only lived one life and I've only seen things through my prism and the immediate circles that I've been in. So you can always learn more from others and, you know, particularly more experience, and you can certainly learn more from people who are less experienced or maybe come from non-traditional backgrounds. So yeah, that's the sort of approach that I've taken so far.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you mentioned the growth mindset, and I think that's one of my kind of my passion outside of just like normal network engineering, Python and all that, is how do we learn, right? Like, how do all of us learn? And you mentioned the growth mindset, the like the deliberate practice. So can you go over a little bit on what do you mean by growth mindset in your opinion?
Sure. So what I mean by growth mindset is, I just maybe compare it to the alternative, which is a fixed mindset.
Sure.
And with a fixed mindset, you know, you can often convince, I mean, our greatest enemy is probably our own mind, to be perfectly frank with you. It's not our closest friends or our partners or our family. It's really, you know, what's going on between the ears.
Right.
And so to that end, like, you know, if you have a fixed mindset, you might think that you're not capable of something, or you don't want to be embarrassed of being, you know, attempting something and fail, so you just don't try, or you put limits on yourself, or you easily dismiss new ideas, concepts, thinkings, approaches.
Right.
So if I talk about a growth mindset, what I mean by that is, you know, you're always looking to you know, improve yourself, and you're always open to evolving as a person, as a professional, as a partner maybe, or as a father, as a son, as a friend. And so if you take that approach of always looking to improve yourself, you're probably more open to opportunities for growth.
Yeah.
But you also probably understand that you're not perfect, and that you always need to work on things, and you always need to improve. And I think, you know, in my short time on earth, I think like, you know, having failures, you know, trying things and not working out, or, you know, making yourself vulnerable and, you know, maybe getting some negative feedback, or, you know, people trying to denigrate you maybe. I think if you just push through that, I think you'll find a lot of benefits. And, you know, it's just probably for me, I found that it leads to a lot of things that you didn't think that were possible, such as being on this podcast with you. Or, you know, like making, you know, virtual friends around the world. I mean, I live you know, completely on the other side of the world. And, you know, told me when I was growing up that I would be doing video conferences with someone that I'd never met in person. You know, I probably wouldn't have thought that was possible. So yeah, just having that sort of mindset of I always can improve, and I always I can take every day or every situation as an opportunity to improve. But that also means that you sort of need to be accountable for the way things are going in your life.
Right.
And, you know, I think people think of words like accountability or discipline as they have like negative connotations in our society. But for me, I find accountability as an empowering word, and discipline is, you know, a positive thing, because if I'm accountable for my own behaviors, thoughts and actions, then I can largely control my destiny or what happens in my life. So, I think having maybe thinking about it like that makes you think that, you know, maybe you're going through something at work where they're going to do a restructure or you get made redundant from your job. And if you're accountable and you think I can control what happens next or I can have a large influence over it, you're probably more inclined to make a positive situation out of it.
Yeah, I think that's very elegantly put, because at the end of the day, you mentioned it before, where the growth mindset is just ultimately, to me, it's just ultimately you believe you could change things, right? Like things are not fixed in nature. And so you could always do your best to change them, however small, however tiny, you know, Tiny Habits. That's actually the book like right next to my hand right here. That you could make a positive impact. And like you said, once you realize that, you could have accountability where you know you control your own action, and that action will control your trajectory, right? Like you mentioned a lot of times, like we if we feel like we're not in control, then we just kind of give up, right? And then, you know, the experiment at Stanford with the prisoners, or a few other famous psychological experiments where people, when they lose the control over their own destiny, then they become, you know, mentally helpless, and they start not care anymore. So I think what you said about growth mindset, controlling your destiny, in term having accountability for your own life, that means a lot. And I think that actually reflects to, you know, your career path and how you get to this point. And you know, we did mention in the beginning of the show that your job title is Network Automation Engineer. Like really, really cool. I don't think I've been able to get that title. So I'm interested in how you got to that title. But let's take back to kind of your origin story on how you get started. I mentioned, you know, the Auto Network Engineering podcast. So you have a much more detailed explanation there, but maybe just give the audience who haven't listen to that episode just like a high level view of how you got here.
So I first got started into technology in high school or secondary school. I don't know, it's called different things around the world. And I was lucky enough to go to a school that had the Cisco Networking Academy. So
yeah, that's amazing. Actually,
yeah. And if I tell I used to live in a regional area, so I didn't live in a capital city when I was growing up in my high school years. So it was extremely rare. Like I think about it now, I think I really just lucked out on that one. Before that, I was planning to be a physio because I liked sport and being active and that sort of stuff. Right. But yeah, I went 2002. That's 20 years ago. Jeez,
wow. Yeah.
Ended up in the Cisco Networking Academy. And, you know, when I was a teenager, I was probably a little bit lazy. I thought I already know computers. I've had computers since I was a kid. So let me just choose that instead of choosing something that might actually challenge me, like, I don't know, philosophy or something like that. So chose that course. And you know, the minute that I sort of started learning about it, like I was just really, really interested and engaged and intrigued. And you know, the first time that we got in the class, like you get 5 routers and you plug in the serial connections and you configure it. And then, you know, the first time you see an actual ping work and then you pull the cable out and the ping drops.
Yeah.
It had me hooked, to be honest with you.
Is that how it works?
Yeah. I was just like, I couldn't get enough of it. And, you know, learning things like, I remember subnetting, like it used to cause me, took me so long to get around to it, but you know, like I really enjoy math, always have. So you know, I enjoyed the challenge of like trying to get better at it. And so I finished high school, and I finished the Cisco Networking Academy, which was over 2 years. Then I went to I don't know what you'd call it in America, maybe like a
community college.
Did a diploma of IT in network engineering. Well, I didn't finish it. That's probably another classic thing. I didn't do the last module.
Automated that class today, but you know, back then it wasn't automatable.
I think the last module was on project management, and at the time I'd already, I did the course to get a job. I got a job, so I was like, classic 18-year-old. Like, why wouldn't you? Like, I'm not going to finish it, which exactly. is probably my maturity. Right. And then, yeah, worked in a desktop replacement role. Then moved back to closer to my home regional town. Yeah. Worked in a university.
Yeah.
Which was quite an innovator in terms of Cisco. Like, they were one of the first companies to have voice over IP phones in Australia.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Yeah. And they've been like a long-term strategic partner. And worked in the service desk, worked up through the levels of the service desk. So I'd done networking earlier on when I was, you know, 16, 17, 18. Right. And then I couldn't get a job in that field. So, you know, I had to work my way through it. And then when I was, I think, 23 or 24, I finally got the opportunity to work as a network engineer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in the university. And that's probably when I first got into networking.
Yeah. And that was actually an amazing story how you got into it, because if I remember correctly, you didn't just it didn't just be like, you know, by chance they go, oh, Tenyo, why don't you become a network engineer? It was you actively yeah. pursuing the project, you volunteer, and obviously yep. you learn in your own time on, you know, even as a service desk, so you go out of your way to actually learn more about networking, try to think of ways to save other people work, and people in terms appreciate that, right?
Yeah. And I think that's another thing is there's the networking, the technology, and then there's networking, the skill. Yeah. And, trying to always sort of see things, try and be empathetic to other people's point of view.
Right.
Trying to give people less reasons not to help you. So, you know, being someone starting out, like, there wasn't really any value in it for them other than unless I was going to do something that they didn't want to do. So I think that's like taking that sort of long-term approach of, probably like a lot of us naturally, because that's the way we're wired. It's what's in it for me. But I think yeah. sometimes you've got to think about what's in it for someone else and try and sell that to them, which I think I touched on in the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. It's empathy, right? So it's not just yeah. empathy for, you know, on the emotional level, but also on a professional level, where it's a rare skill set. And usually most of us, I myself included, don't really think about that until you're much older, right? I find myself thinking about that once I have kids, because they're just yes. so different looking at the world from you. Then you start thinking about, okay, how should I look at it from their point of view? I don't know if it's the same way with you.
Yeah, I mean, not to get too heavy, but yeah, I mean, children are another.
Feel free to shed a few tears if you want.
another level of, motivation. I think I probably sort of had sort of three phases to my personal evolution.
Yeah,
and I'm in probably, you know, a new. Well, I've been in the last phase for nearly 4 years now, and if you want a strong motivator, I think having children and trying to provide the best possible environment for them and for their learning and growing and evolution will motivate you to probably
to a great extent
and, you know, yeah. put in a lot more work. I mean, I thought I was busy before I had children. But yeah,
you're like, hey, you know, all this time I was watching Netflix, I could have done X, Y, and Z, and now it's like filled by children and family and taking them to soccer yeah. practices.
Yeah, so yeah, and being empathetic to people, you know, not just at work, you know, being empathetic to the people around you, and, you know, always, I mean, obviously you need to focus on yourself, and you can't help others unless you yourself are in the right headspace and in the right right mind frame. But
agreed.
Yeah, I think being empathetic to others is a big thing. And yeah, you know, we touched on some of the things that I've been working on, but, you know, that's one of my motivations at the moment for mm-hmm. doing, like, you know, for maintaining the blog or creating some open source projects.
Yep.
You know, like, I always think, you know, what would I have done back, you know, 3 or 4 years ago? What tool would have helped me when I was first starting out doing something, or what blog posts or or, you know, YouTube video would have helped me as a beginner. And I think like your book is an excellent example of you wrote the book, and I remember you at the time saying, you know, what book would I have loved to have read when I first started? And literally when I read your book, I remember just being like, this is the book that I needed. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd been doing automation of some type since 2015 or late 2014, 2015. So when I got your book, it just sort of strung everything together, and I was just able to take like a lot more, I was able to accelerate my journey a lot faster. So I always think about people like yourself, you know, people that create open source projects, people that upload videos, people that do Pluralsight courses or CBT Nugget courses, and, you know, they might be getting a nominal fee, but they're really doing it to you know, like leave the ladder there for other people to climb up on board the journey. And so that's, I think back to that empathy piece, you know, it's something that strongly motivates me. I certainly don't do any of this extracurricular work for any financial benefits, so that I leave a positive impact for others and maybe just help one person.
For sure. So, I'm glad you brought it up. So if you're, you know, watching the YouTube channel video, then you could see like we're pulling up Daniel's blog. But if, you know, don't worry, if you're listening to the podcast, we have the link in the show notes. But what I want to kind of go over is just, you know, obviously we'll want to go over your blog. And also Daniel is a you know, tweets frequently and, you know, not shy about sharing his experience and opinion on things. And also something that's different for you than a lot of people, myself included, is you're also open. You're also a maintainer for open source projects. And I think it was called Mother Starter. So I want to go over all of that, but let's start. Like, where do you want to start? Do you want to just, you know, talk about your blog first? Like I like the fact that you're grouping them into like a series of like start here, or if you want to learn about Source of Truth, there's like, you know, 10 other blogs that you could read on and in sequential order. So like, did you want to just talk about your blog a little bit?
Sure. Well, I might just maybe talk about content in general, because I think it's interesting discussion. So like for me, I didn't produce any public content at all until 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And if we go back to that growth mindset, you know, you have to be vulnerable to put your report, your thoughts, opinions, feelings, your voice, your face on the internet.
Right.
Because there are people out there, I haven't had this experience in the network automation community, you know, who might be critical of you sharing what you think or some of your technical values or whatever it is. So, I decided in 2019 that firstly, I wanted to create a blog so that I could document some of the learnings I was having, but also like share those learnings with other people. So maybe people in the future might stumble across it and read some of the blog posts and get some value out of it. I also started the blog to talk about technical subjects like, you know, exploring Nornir or... I think I've got one on there about like using make files with GCP and that sort of stuff, but also some non-technical topics. I mean, I don't profess to be any expert. I'm always open to learning, but you know, I talk about some of the other non-technical topics, which I feel like maybe I can add to the space. I mean, I'm not as technically proficient as some of the other people in the network automation industry, but maybe I have some of the other, I can provide some value in some other places.
Yeah, like growth mindset, as you mentioned before, right? Or, you know, business value. I think what stood out from your approach than maybe like a pure technologist approach is you always think about the business value and in term that could justify, you know, whatever resources you want to go out and get, because you're actually standing from the point of view of, you know, businesses and how to actually make a profit, right? Like, how does it be relevant to the problem that your business is trying to solve?
We'll be back after a quick break. Hi, I'm Esprit Devora. I created Women in Tech so listeners could walk away feeling, if she can do it, so can I.
I do not have an inclination if I will succeed at this, but I have nothing that will hold me back.
It's not anything new that women are here. It's new that we're hearing our stories.
I'm afraid of doing, but I'm too curious not to do it.
You have a lot more power than you probably think you do. You got this.
Subscribe to Women in Tech wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I love network automation, but if there was some other tool that I could put in my tool, like sometimes I think of like maybe a master builder is a good analogy. You know, they have tools in their tool belt, or they have tools in their van. And realistically, I mean, where the mastery is using the right tool for the right job, or you know, learning about new tools so that when they come across a problem, they, you know, select the right tool, or they recommend a tool to you know, their apprentices or whatnot.
Yeah.
So, I just lost my train of thought.
No, that's okay. I think what you mentioned about the right tool is pretty crucial, right? And that kind of shows in your approach to, say, open source project versus a commercial project, which is what you talked about in the in the other podcast episode with Ethan on Packet Pusher.
Yeah.
So you always prefer, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but you actually, I get the feeling that you prefer to learn things in a deep way to know whether this is the right tool or not, versus somebody hand you a shrink wrap software and say, well, you know, we've done all the testing, trust me.
Yeah, sorry, I got my thought back. So
no worries, yeah, go for it.
Basically, learning the tools is just being aware of all your options. So, you know, coming back to the business value, like the reason that I'm passionate about network automation is because it ultimately delivers significantly greater business value to the business that I work for, or the companies that I work for.
Sure.
And it also delivers value to me personally. I mean, if we just think about it, like, if I can automate some of the processes that I have to do in my job that I might have had to have done out of hours with changes, or automate away some of the menial tasks that I do that don't give me that fulfillment in terms of that growth mindset. Like if I'm sitting there every once a week and grabbing outputs and creating an Excel file to send to my manager so they can send to someone else, I mean, is that really fulfilling me with – that's not going to fulfill me with enjoyment long term. I'm not going to enjoy what I'm doing. So. Automation is just another tool in the tool belt. And ultimately, like, yeah, I just wanted to impress upon people that, you know, when you read, maybe you read my Twitter or look at my blog or YouTube, you might think that I'm a techie person and therefore I only get techie things. And I just wanted to convey that, no, it's all about what's the business value for the individual, like as in you in the job and the company, because it needs to work for both. And so that was sort of what I wanted to get across.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you and Nick Russo are two people who stood out to me as being very business value add focus, right? And I think it's demonstrative of how you progress in your career and how it has propelled you to where you are today. I completely agree. And I don't know if you know, but you know, back in college, I was actually a finance major, and I didn't even touch computer until I was much older, like last year in college, only because when I was growing up, like we couldn't really afford a computer. So I was actually sharing a computer with my sister, and I didn't dare take it apart and try to mess it up. And none of us could write out term paper and stuff like that. Right. So, so I've always been interested in business and, you know, as a finance major, you calculate something like internal rate of return or net present value. And computer was just kind of the natural progression in doing that as opposed to calculate yourself. Like if you could use Excel, they have some amazing built-in functions. You don't have to pull out your pencil and pen to calculate it. But definitely that, you know, when you're like yourself learning something that's open source, you learn it well, you create your content and you push it out to the public so you could help other people. So I'm wondering, you know, I mean, you have open source projects and also mm-hmm. the blog. So how did you choose the platform you want to write about? And I have my own path, but I want to hear what your thoughts first.
Yeah, it's a great question. It's probably the first thing I do.
Yeah.
Like I spend a lot of time at work, but I do a lot of thinking on my bike, riding around, riding near the local creek. And to be honest with you, like I probably should charge my work for it, because I solve many, many things not at my desk.
Expense your like bike riding hours.
Yeah. But really, I try and think about that. It's always about the audience and what would be the easiest way for them to receive this message in the most effective way possible. Yeah. And then also, each medium has a certain amount of effort that comes along with it. So,
sure.
If we talk about a blog, it's a static medium. You don't really need to rehearse it. You can write a little bit, come back to it. Refine it, come back to it, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure.
We talk about like being on this podcast, obviously, you need to do preparation. You need to, ideally, hopefully this is coming across well, but
rehearse
and think about what, about your journey before you get on here and make sure you've got at least some sort of coherent thoughts. Yeah. If you think about video, you obviously need to record the video, you need to narrate the video, there needs to be there almost needs to be like a script or some sort of journey that you want to take your person on. You think about PowerPoints. For me, PowerPoints, you shouldn't be able to understand a PowerPoint presentation by just looking at the PowerPoint deck. To me, if I can understand what the presentation's about by looking at the PowerPoint deck, you've done, in my mind, that's not a correct use of that medium. So a PowerPoint should accentuate the presentation. It shouldn't be a replacement for the presentation. Like back to video, you've got to edit it. You've got to maybe you might want to time code it as well. So, if you've got like a really long video, you might want to put time codes in there, which YouTube and other platforms have.
Yeah.
So always thinking about that end user. That's what you got to sort of think of what you want to, what your idea is, what would be the best medium to get your point across.
Yeah.
And some things fit better in spaces than others. So the Source of Truth series, I don't think there would have been any value to do a video to that, because I'm not really like visually explaining anything or trying to visually engage my audience. So that was an example of writing a written form. Also, there was a lot of content. I think there was end up being like 5,000 words or something. So over all four blog posts. So, chunking it up as well. I think that's another good thing. So making it consumable. Like if I wrote the four blog posts in one blog post, if you just click on one of the posts, Eric, my site tells you how many minutes read it is. So, like if I made it all in one post and then up the top you see there, if it says 38 minute read,
right, I've lost
90% of the people just be like, I don't have time. I don't have 38 minutes of undivided attention to read this thing.
I could be riding my bike for 30 minutes and get some exercise in.
There's that. And then I've recorded some videos for some of the open source projects that I've built, and those videos were tutorials. I could have written out the instructions, but I felt like if you click on the Mother Starter the repo, just pinned down the bottom just a little bit. Yep, click on there.
Yep.
So this particular project, I've got like a visual diagram. So trying to engage the user early, because I'm not patient. I'm a big scroller, and then what's in it for me, and then I'll dive in. So, this diagram, sort of visually, you don't really need to know what's going on, but you can see that there's inputs, something, and outputs. So you can mentally go, oh, this is interesting or not interesting. Right. And the videos in this particular example are how to use it, how to maybe customize it. And I could have written that out, but it would have been a large amount of content. And honestly, if you're going to elect an open source project, you really want to know what it does before you start trying to use it.
Oh, sorry. I click on one of the video and start playing.
Yeah. So, yeah. So that was like an example of using video to get my point across. I think the videos are like 8 minutes and 5 minutes or something like that. So, yeah, hopefully I've explained that. I can just go. Eric.
No, I was going to say, like, I've always want to know the whole picture first, right? Like, I like to know what are the major components. Like, of course, first you got to know the benefits. It's like, why am I reading this and what do I get out of it? And say, okay, you could cure cancer. That's great. Then I want to know what are the big pieces. Now here's, you know, here's the input, here's the modifier. So now I know by the time I finish reading, I should, or like during the time when I was reading, then I could kind of piece together what I'm reading here is about input, or what I'm engaged right here is about processing. So that even if I have, say, so you list out your inputs being CSV, JSON, and Excel, like the spreadsheet, right? XOSX. Or, yep. And so as long as I'm reading about that, then I could say, okay, now if I have like, XML as an input, or if I have some other inputs, or, you know, then all I have to do is just kind of swap out this portion and all the other ones, like your mother starter ingestion, your transformation, still applicable, or, you know, like your output. And I just need to, you know, let's just say I want to do HTML as an output versus CSV, then I just need to swap out that component. So I really enjoy like the fact that you've broken it down into pieces so that mentally, you know, when I'm learning your content, I could piece them together in.
Yeah. And I think it takes a lot of practice with this sort of technical writing, I guess, or technical
compartmentalization, would you say?
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I think I've watched quite a few presentations, like David Barroso, the
Napalm
creator of Napalm and Nornir.
Sure.
A lot of his presentations, you know, they start out easy and they ramp up as they go.
Right.
And there's like a story that's building as you go through the presentation. So at each level you're engaged and there's a suspense. You know, there isn't, I'm going to tell you everything now and then the rest is just stuff you don't need to know. Like it builds upon things. And so like that's how you engage a user. Sorry, you engage the recipient. Whether it's in written form, whether it's in visual form or video form. And the idea is like you don't go straight to the complex stuff at the start because you'll lose people. So you need to like gently ramp up like the nomenclature that you're using in your project or the wording. And I think I found his work as a great inspiration for sort of the style that I use. I also was lucky in one of my roles to do like presentation training as well. So I learn a lot of tips and tricks out of that. And I think that those skills, sometimes people talk of them as soft skills. But to me, like if you can't present, persuade and convince people, you're gonna have challenges whether you're a technical person or a non-technical person. So I think I kind of challenge the notion that some of these skills are soft skills, because I don't think that you can be truly effective unless you spend some time on these things.
Yeah, I agree. I think soft skill, some people might say that, and I've heard that before as well, but I personally don't think of them as soft skills. I kind of categorize them as in macro skills, meaning these kind of skills are applicable to multiple areas, right? Like your reading and writing, how you communicate, how you think for yourself, how you learn. Those are kind of macro skills that once you learn or how to establish good habits, once you learn how to do those are applicable to every facet of your life, like whether you're, you know, you're with your partner, with your kids, or professionally, personally. So those are actually the skill sets that I think really worth investing in versus like, you know, how BGP works or how OSPF works, right? It's just even more important because, you know, you could learn BGP, OSPF with next great thing, if you know how to learn. So I'm glad you mentioned it in your, you know, content creation journey. It's interesting how you kind of structure your content creation according to, you know, kind of how you learn things yourself, like you're kind of progressing it.
Yeah. And just like another thing on the content. So I got a logo developed by a good friend of mine, Tim Baker. Mm-hmm. He's okay. one of my school friends.
Shout out to Tim.
shout out to Tim. He'll love this. He's got no idea what this stuff is. I think
exactly. He's my left ear is framing or something.
So I got my logo done by him, and if you click on my Twitter, like you'll see that the banner has a color to it. I spent a bit of money in branding. As I said before, I'm not trying to sell anything, but like I'm trying to have, you know, a coherent sort of look and feel about things. And when you watch my videos, it's got like a little intro with my logo on it and that sort of stuff. So, I mean, like other people out there, I mean, this isn't really like you probably need to work on the quality of the content, but if you're trying to sort of present yourself publicly, it might be an idea to, you know, spend a little bit of time or money in sort of having a coherent approach across the board. And then just one more thing I just wanted to touch on, Eric, is like I'll just share this publicly. Like I despise the sound of my own voice. Like every time I hear my own voice, whether it's recording a video of my cat doing something silly or whatever it is, every time I hear my own voice, it's akin to like someone scratching their nails down a chalkboard. For those of you that
you and I both, buddy.
But I had to get over that. Like I had to just let go of that. Like, and that was like that, back to what we're talking about at the start. That's an example of like a fixed mindset. Like I hate the sound of my voice, therefore I'm not going to record anything because it's embarrassing. But like that was just a constraint that I was putting on myself. And no one else has ever said to me that, like in my entire life, no one's ever said, oh, your voice sounds really silly. Like you sound like a
like a kangaroo.
I had to grow up and get over it to get to these other levels. So I just thought I'd share that because I think maybe like publicly we can all sort of project that, you know, we've got everything under control and that, you know, we're very much you know, everything's going fine. But I think, back to sort of like being vulnerable to grow. I wouldn't be on here if I still had that fixed mindset, right? Like I'd be terrified to be on here.
So, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think a lot of truth in that is, you know, I too don't like hear the sound of my voice. When we're in the car, like when I take my daughter to school or something, sometimes she would say, oh, daddy, did you release another episode? Can we listen to it? No. No, heck no, right? Like, you know, I every time I do or like stop when I shouldn't be, I always say, okay, you know, how do I edit that out? But if I edit that out, it's another jump frame. And so that's something I too have to get over it. But, you know, if I look at the benefit of you know, just put yourself out there, is I get the opportunity to talk to amazing people such as yourself, such as all the other guests on the podcast before. And sometimes it's not like worth it if there's a troll or something that's, you know, or, you know, you put something out there and people don't really like it and they're more critical than not. But at the end of the day, the benefit really outweighs the cost, which is just, you know, kind of setting up the lights, the camera, get some subscription going. But I end up talking to amazing people, amazing human beings, and I learn a lot of stuff in the way. So that's how I feel about it on just the content creation. But I'm wondering, you know, you mentioned, you know, the growth mindset and why you kind of create the content for the general public, because you want to help other people. So what other benefits or, you know, reasons on top of that, that you think you want to create contents for the general public to consume?
We'll be back after a quick break.
Do you want to change the world? Former Tesla executive turned podcaster Billy Samoa is on a mission to help you do it. His show Inside Out reveals transformational insights that can literally change your life. If you're a changemaker who wants to make an impact while you're on this planet, then this is the podcast for you. Through deep dive interviews with the world's most remarkable people, your mind will be filled with new ideas and perspectives that will give you the secrets you need to make your mark. Go to insightoutshow.com or subscribe to Insight Out on your favorite podcast platform.
I can think of a couple of reasons. One of the reasons sure. is like I get to speak to people like yourself or people like Carl Montanari, who you've had on the podcast, or
yeah, Carl's awesome
team, or the Art of Network yes. Engineering team, or I get to engage with people who are in my field because I've put myself out there, and therefore they can maybe take an interest, or we might have something to talk about.
Right.
Which is a great thing. I live in Melbourne, Australia. You know, it's a city of 5 million people. So it's, you know, it's a significant size, but we don't have the scale of companies that you would have in America or in more densely populated countries. So
sure.
There's less people doing network automation here. So there's less
right.
Chance to network and physically meet like-minded people. So I think it's a great way of speaking to other like-minded people. And
I agree.
You know, I think that you know, I use Twitter for many reasons. Apologies to all of you that would see stuff about a thing called Carlton Football Club. It's an Australian football team. You probably have to mute that word if you're following me. But I use it so that I can stay up to date and stay across, you know, new things or thoughts or comments or conversations. So it's a great way yeah. for me to just to stay across the industry and those sorts of things. And then, yeah. you know, the second reason of doing all this sort of stuff is, now, if you think about like the modern sort of hiring practices, like I find
you mean like jobs and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Like if I talk about my friend Tim, who's yeah. a successful graphic designer, he has sure. a portfolio. You know, that's a common thing in their industry. You know, he probably right. has a resume as well. But like being able to articulate a multi-dimensional description and adequate representation of yourself publicly allows people to sort of understand who you are, understand your thoughts, the way that you approach things.
Yeah.
So it's a good way of articulating yourself to others. And should they choose to read it or should they choose to not, you know, your public, anything you put digitally out there in the public, you know, can be used negatively or positively, you know, in your career. You know, maybe taking back to sort of like that accountability piece, like being deliberate with what I actually project and put on public forums so that people can have, you know, I can get across the accurate picture of who I am and what I'm about. Because like when you're, you know, like I've done many interviews trying to interview for people or hire for people.
Right.
And yes, I'm interested in their technical skills. I'm interested in, you know, they know dictionaries and lists and Python.
Yeah.
They know, you know, how classes work and all that stuff. But I really want to know the person. I want to know what drives you. What are your personal values?
Right.
You know, what do you do? You know, what motivates you? How are you going to behave in certain situations? That's what yeah. I want to know if I was going to hire someone. So, I mean, just being transparent that, you know, I'm not like actively looking for work or anything, but I think it's just important to own your personal brand.
Yeah.
And to project what you want to project and to have like a, you know, coherent story of who you are as a person.
Yeah. It's almost like what you're stood for, right? Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. And just having like values that you live by.
Right.
And actually living them. So, you know, like I help a lot of people not on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Or I help people, you know, direct messages. Like I help do editorial reviews for training content or review books or
yeah.
For the record,
Daniel was one of three people who actually very thoughtfully gave me feedbacks on my latest book, and he didn't have to do that, right? And also he just had a baby and he's on paternity, and but he didn't have to do that. And he took the time, even his busy schedule, and gave me very thoughtful markdown file on the book. So, you know, thank you. Just want to throw that in there.
Okay. Thanks, Eric. By the way, everyone should read that book. It's a great book.
No, no. go ahead.
So, you know, I live my personal values. But also, like, if I don't, I mean, the world works a certain way. I can agree or disagree with it. But like, if I don't sort of articulate what I am or who I'm about publicly, then I'm probably like closing myself off to things as well. And yeah, like, yeah. I definitely just try and help all people in life, and try and leave, you know, like, one of the things that that I like to look myself in the mirror is, you know, whenever I enter a situation or an environment, by the time I leave it, I want to leave it in a better place.
Sure. You
know, so that might be I'm going to move into a share house with you know, complete strangers, or I'm going to move overseas and work in I lived in London for a while, and I worked for a company over there, and I always want to leave things in a better situation than what I found it. Yeah. And I always, you know, that's something that I'm really focused on, and I want to be someone who people think leaves a positive impact. There's enough things going on in the world where people are leaving, you know, negative impacts. It strongly motivates me to be a giver, not a taker, essentially.
Right. But I think at the same time, you mentioned something about portfolio, right? So I actually consume a lot of podcasts as well. One of my favorite podcasts is called Django Chat. And I mean, if you're into Django framework, that's definitely something you want to listen to. But even if you're not, something that's very consistent in the podcast for the host was, if you maintain an open source package like yourself, you're automatically at the top of that chain for hiring decision, right? Because if you maintain it, that means that speaks several things about you. One is you're able to dedicate time for something that you're passionate about. And second is that you're able to communicate with people, right? Like if people submit pull requests and you automatically shut them down, like, that's not going to be a successful open source project, because you have to work with people. You have to be able to communicate over digital format with the world we're living in. And, you know, also be able to just dedicate your time and collaboration. So if you ever contribute to open source project or maintain an open source project like yourself, you know, not just from us, right? Like, it's really, in general, like, people look highly of that. And creating content is the same way, if I'm hearing you correctly, is just, you know, you're trying to leave a mark. You're trying to, you know, be vulnerable and it kind of put yourself out there for the chance of helping someone else. And it's like a big if, right?
Yeah. And yeah, like, I just have, yeah, mad props to people that run and maintain open source projects. I mean, it's kind of like having, you know, 1,000 children all asking you, you know, what's your favorite TV show, and you have one TV. Like, it's thankless work. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
It's there are so many skills that you have to learn to do something like that.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, that's like anyone who's involved in that space, like, I have nothing but respect for those people. Also, like, people that write books, you know, like, it's a massive, massive, massive time investment to write a book. And, you know, let's say you made $100,000 out of a book, for argument's sake. If you worked out, like, the dollars per hour, like, I think people would be surprised at how much people would actually make out of that. You know, like, I created a video on one of my favorite projects, open source networking projects, is Nornir. And I created a video on Nornir filtering, which is one of the things that I like a lot about Nornir.
Yeah.
I created like a 50-minute video, but I also created like a canned demo so that people could like actually try the exercises out. And that took me, I think, nearly 40 hours to create the canned GitHub demo.
Oh my God.
That took me like at least 25 hours to record like a 50-minute video. But people would just be like, oh, there's a video. It's 50 minutes and, oh, someone's created a repo. So, like, I think I just want to share that because I think maybe people might think that, you know, like a 6-minute blog post or a 10, it's so easy. Well, like I don't want to deter anyone. I'm just trying to say, like, we should probably just have a bit of an appreciation for the people that, you know, commit their time. And even if they're getting compensated, like, it's a lot of mental energy that you're expending. It's a lot of, using a lot of your, energy every day to do that stuff. And just want to say thank you to everyone that does it. Yeah. People like yourself, Eric. I mean, I don't know if you want to share, like, how long did it take you to do, say, the networking first edition?
It was a little bit easier for me because I've been keeping good notes up until that point.
All right.
So it was like, okay, when I first started, because I always forget things. So I've been keeping this habits about taking notes, right? So when I had the opportunity to write it, first of all, I thought they made a mistake. I was double checking with the publisher and said, are you sure I'm the right person? Are you sure, like, the general public is, like you said, there was no other content at the time that matches network automation. So I double check with them and say, usually when people talk about networking in Python, they're talking about, like, sockets, and they're talking about UDP, TCP streams on the server themselves. And how do you manage that, right? So it's not really talk about network management automation. So I have to double check and triple check with them to make sure, like, there's a product market fit and what they have in mind. And also, then I went back to my notes and look at all the things. And I took notes, but they're, like, all scattered all over the place. And they're not organized into a logical format. Like you said, you don't want people to, you know, go certain content and then fall off a cliff and say, you know, you just left me hanging and this is not the right way to learn. So all in all, I would say, you know, even with all those in mind, I set up a system for myself, like writing 1,000 words a day, regardless of whether I like it or not, and accumulate that and trying to be a periodic, you know, check in with the editor to make sure, you know, whatever feedback she gave me, I could correct them right away. And also, there's a lot of work on just checking and double checking. I mean, you get so nervous when something is permanently out there. So you Absolutely. Want to make sure you do your due diligence, right? Like, I'm not afraid of being vulnerable because who cares, right? Like, if somebody think I'm good or bad, it doesn't impact me. You know, as long as my kids think I'm awesome, then I'm good. But also at the same time, even though you know something for sure, when you write it down, there's a certain weight to it. So you go out and double check and say, is this really, really true, right? And, you know, I also rely on my friends for, you know, shout out to Alan Sue for being the technical editor or technical verifier for technical reviewer. So at the time, you know, I run all my code through my Mac and Linux. So Alan helped me out as running the code in the Windows environment whenever he could, right? So, like, Ansible control nodes, you can't do that. But everything else, you could run it through the Endos machine, Windows machine. So I was able to do that and all that. So all in all, I say it took me about 4.5 months to bash out everything. And that's really dedicating a lot of time writing it, maybe another month to get the final editing done. And then that's not it, right? Because I mean, I don't want to make this about me, but just FYI, right? Like, writing writing the book is the first step. And, you know, I think the marketing and the promotion afterwards and supporting the code, keeping it up to date, those are really just as important as writing the book itself. So so the dollar figure you throw out there, that's nowhere near compensated.
Missing some zeros, is it?
Yeah, I'm missing some zero. Like, I get the zero in the front, not the back. So, you know, the decimal point is the where the devil lies. But no, totally. Like, I appreciate it. But you know, the feeling that you have it out there. And so we're recording 2022, right? And so obviously we're still kind of in the hopefully in the tail end of COVID and so on. But back in 2020, you know, when COVID first hit, I was thinking about how do I be more productive? How do I, you know, do all of that stuff? So I went ahead and had the opportunity to translate the book into Chinese, the third edition.
Yep.
And so I translated that myself, even though I came to this country in when I was 13, graduated from elementary school. So my Chinese sucked, but I was doing word by word.
Probably a bit better than mine though, Eric. Just quietly.
Yeah, man. Like it was crazy. It's almost like I have to go relearn the language just to translate and all that. But the point was the feeling, the amount of accomplishment that you get when my mom sent me the picture of like, oh my God, you know, my book is in the bookshelf that my mom could see, that was just unparalleled. So I think content creation is really benefits yourself more than anything else. Obviously, you want to make it positive impact, like you said, leave it a better place for others. But at the same time, it's beneficial to you as well.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Because I mean, you're doing a lot of learning, like you're doing a lot of incidental learning or maybe intentional learning.
Yeah,
you know, to your example, like you're learning how to interact with marketing teams or you know how to adopt certain writing styles so that it passes reviews. You know, you're thinking about like fact checking, resource references, like in your book. I'm pretty sure there's like what do they call it? You know, the references, what do you call the thing?
Yeah, like appendix or...
Yeah. Where you're like referencing to Ansible docs or I think it was the OpenFlow.
Right.
So you have to, like there's the stuff that you want to get across, but then there's all these other things that you have to learn. So you definitely benefit out of it for sure.
All these distractions. No, just kidding. Yeah, I actually had to. So there's like an actual graphic of showing like popularity of Python web frameworks, and I actually had to go track down the person who has that website, and say, hey, can I use this image? Right. So all of these other stuff that you don't really think about until you start doing this and so on. But at the same time, you learn so much, and these are kind of macro skills like we talked about before, where it's applicable for other areas as well.
Yeah.
So Daniel, I mean, we've talked about content creation a lot, and that's actually one of like both of our passion, it seems, right? So can you walk us through, let's just say you have, and how do you, you know, for the audience who are now inspired and want to go out and create their own content, how do you, I mean, let's just assume they picked a medium platform, like they're really good at writing and they want to write their first blog or the 10th blog. Can you take through a process of how you go from an ideation to actually publish your blog?
Oh, that's a good one. So I'll start with the idea. So,
sure.
I use my website's built on Hugo. So it's a static site generator. So it uses, essentially Markdown. You write your blog post in Markdown, and then you build the site and you publish it.
Right.
So probably what I'd start out is with, you know, with the idea, and then inside the Markdown file, I might firstly just list out some dot points of what I want to get across.
Right.
Get all the dot points out of what I want to say. So just commit something back to what you were saying before about like writing a book and committing it to paper. There's a deep power in committing your thoughts to something tangible instead of just having them swirling around in your head. So I'll list out the dot points, and then I'll review or revise the dot points and try and order things or do things in a certain way so that I tell a story through a blog post. Like nothing worse than imagine you're reading a book and you're reading page one, page two, and then it skipped to page 120. And you lose the user, right? So you've got to actually maybe try and order things in a certain way.
Right.
So I might put some headings out and then put some dot points under those headings. Then I'll just start like literally just fleshing out some paragraphs about it.
Yeah.
And try and, you know, maybe knock out the ones that I'm very sure about first, and then go through the others. And then, so at that point, I have a draft. I have like some headings and the content, and then you know, I'll probably work on the introduction and maybe the conclusion. I like to sort of always start with why, what's this blog post about, and what have we learned in this blog post. That's generally the way that I try and do it. Then I'll probably take a break for a bit. The reason I take a break is I need to let it like marinate for a bit. Maybe hit the bike again, and just leave it for a little bit. Let it sit there. Because I find that if I just try and write it all, review it, knock it out, I'll probably commit it out into the world, and then something else will come to mind. So I might just leave that for a few days.
When you hit the publish button, something else will pop up in your mind.
So I'll just leave it for a few days, you know, and then come back to it. And I find that like leaving that space allows you to just essentially, you know, as you're writing something, you're building, you know, your memory or your RAM about the topic. So just like flushing that out, coming back and reading it. And then sometimes I find that maybe I've got the ordering wrong, or as I'm trying to explain, say, the fourth topic out of the list of topics, like I go topic 1, 2, 3, 4. As I'm trying to explain the fourth topic, I need to really re-clarify topic 1. So I just start tweaking that sort of stuff. I get it to a point where I'm happy with it. And then I'm going to talk about this. There'll be a blog post coming out soon about how I've automated this process, but I'll review it for grammar and spelling errors in Visual Studio Code. I'll just use this as an example, but there'll be a blog post coming out soon about how I actually automate this process. And also I'll review it for grammar or spelling errors. And then I'll say, yep, I'm happy with everything, like happy with all the content. And then again, I'll leave it another 3 or 4 days. And then I will actually read the content as if I know nothing that's in my own head. So it takes like a little bit of a mental exercise. Like just imagine you don't have your own brain and what you're getting across, and literally read the words as they're literally written on the page. Like almost like if you were in a team, try and get like the least experienced person to read maybe your internal docs, because they'll literally read what's on the page, and they won't infer between the gaps or understand, you know, the implied language. And sometimes
I like that very much. I think I think that's a great thing that I did not do. So something I've learned as well.
Yeah, and the reason I do that is back to that empathy piece. Is like, no one's got my brain, so they probably don't. Like, if I just only read it through my perspective, something might not hit the mark. So I'll take this sort of like lobotomy approach. Read the thing. Sometimes there might be tweaks. Sometimes not. And then I will probably publish it on that day or maybe the day after, and then send it out to the world. I might do a tweet about it. I might do a LinkedIn post about it to get that across. So that's my workflow. I've started automating the process, though, using an open source project called Vail, which is written in Golang. And it can automate your spelling checks. Grammar spelling checks and writing style checks.
Styles too. So, like, you want to be more like informative, or you want to be more casual or something like that.
Things like, you know, when you write they are, you know, they are, it'll tell you that you should use the there. So they it'll say, you know, like concatenate that. Like, that's not good writing style. There's actually different writing styles you can use. I use the Microsoft writing style and another one called Write Good. But so I've automated the checking of that in a CI pipeline. So every time I write a markdown blog post, it gets committed, runs in GitHub Actions, and it automates these checks. And if they pass, then I will merge it to my master branch in GitHub, and then it'll automatically build the website and then invalidate my Amazon CloudFront cache. And then inform Google that my sitemap has been updated. So that I've automated those checks, because I've had a couple of very nice friends that have pointed out to me spelling mistakes or grammar mistakes after I published a post, which I really appreciate. Like, they've sent me like direct messages.
Sure.
But personally, it's a bit embarrassing that I didn't pick them up. But I think you can almost become cross-eyed when you're reading the same content days and days and days on end. Like, you're reviewing it 6 or 7 or 8 times.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You might skip past it. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if people are not familiar with Markdown, so they're basically like, you know, instead of styling your words like bold or italic or footnotes in like Word, you actually use symbols and like almost like HTML tags, right? Like when you need to bold something, when you need to something, a header is, you know, #, or, you know, something like that. We need to do bullet points. So what makes it really difficult was, I mean, I admire you for writing everything in Markdown. I mean, I don't. I try to, but I don't.
I've gone full hipster with the Markdown thing. But,
yeah. Know, so
up the youth.
But it's like, yeah. So, but the fact that you start with Markdown makes it pretty simple to automate, because then you could just feed through whatever parser and generator to do that. I mean, the fact that you're automating it reminded me of a conversation that I had with, not conversation, but just the email exchange I had with Doug Hellman, which is the author of the Python 3 and also Python 2 standard library by example. And he also has the website for Python 2 and Python 3 module of the week. And I was so amazed at how he could produce so much on a weekly basis. I actually emailed him and asked him about how he did it. And that's exactly what he told me as what you just said, was he'd start everything with Markdown and he would feed it through different parsers. So some of them, so the same content could become, you know, Python module of the week article, like maybe it's a string module, RE module, whatever. And at the same time, it gets feed into the book format, whatever, you know. I think he was with, I don't want to mistake the publisher, but whatever the format the publisher uses for, you know, the final product that he could do. And also, you know, if he ever wants to do it in the Word, he doesn't have to change the content itself. So that's pretty awesome, Daniel. I think I'm really looking forward to your blog post about how you automate that whole process.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, like, and this is just like an example of like, it's got nothing to do with network automation.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I'm always looking to improve. So, you know, I thought surely there's a better way of doing this.
the famous famous words. Surely there's a better way to do this.
Yeah. So that's, you know, like, I spent time and I've worked out, and yeah, I've just got to get the blog post together. So it's like a blog post about the blog post, which is a bit of like an Inception style article.
Exactly.
Yeah, but also, yeah, just, yeah, just trying to use the tools that are out there. And yeah, I think hopefully people will find it of value.
Yeah,
is something of like learning Markdown as part of network automation studies.
Right.
And then decided to like use Markdown to build my site.
Right. And your GitHub module, for example.
Yeah, yeah. So just using everything that you learn and putting it together.
Man, like, you know, it's funny you mentioned Inception. So now you have to do a tenant style where the backwards is the same as the forward or something like that, right? But it's fun. I mean, you know, so we talked about content creation, we talked about why you do it, we talked about the various mindsets of doing content creation, how to choose the medium, the benefits, and we kind of went through the whole process of how you go from ideation to a finished product. So those are just excellent. I think I've learned a lot from our conversation. Is there anything else you want to mention on just content creation, like kind of call to action for the audience?
Yeah, look, I would say give it a go. Like, the other thing that you could do is maybe write a private blog for half a year. If you don't feel like, if you're like me and you've felt a little bit insecure about it, you might want to just so we maybe can link in the show notes, Eric. You can build Hugo. Hugo's like a static site generator server. And you can write maybe your own blog post for 6 months. maybe, and not publish it anywhere.
Right.
Or, you know, so just give it a go. Reach out if you need help or advice. I think that's like always happy to help people. And yeah, just understand that like whatever you produce today, it'll get better. So it's just like it's like anything you need to practice. So maybe that's why I mentioned like maybe just record your video, but don't send it, like don't put it on YouTube.
Yeah, send it to your mom. Like you'll get some good feedbacks from there.
Yeah, you'll get some robust feedback.
Nothing but love
from your parents. Yeah. So I think like there's space for everyone to develop content. And I think it's a good way of like showing people what you're about as well. But also like if you don't want to produce content, but maybe you want to like sharpen up like helping projects or just getting involved, I think like I haven't had anyone to this point where I've sort of been like strongly deterred to the point where I don't want to do it anymore. So it's not that scary, even though I've maybe tried to scare a few of you. That wasn't my intent.
No, I mean, I think that's great. I think that's a good idea to just kind of get into the habit of writing stuff. And I forgot where I got this from, but the gist of it was that if you're not good at doing something, why do you not do it, right? If you're not good at something, you should be practicing more. Like, how do you get better unless you start doing it and practice more? So, you know, if you're sold on building your own portfolio, if you're sold on, you know, kind of building your own brand, you should just start do it. I mean, you will not get better unless you start practicing. And, you know, like I'm sure if you go back to reread about the very first blog that you wrote, you immediately start think of a lot of things that you could improve, but that's okay, right? That just means how much you've grown over the years.
Yeah, definitely a bit of strike down, structure and markdown, Eric. But it's just like, just understanding that, you know, tomorrow you should aim to be better than today. So naturally something you produced last week shouldn't be as good as what it is this week, you know, like, and just being cool with that, I think.
Almost like you've done something wrong if you're, you know, if what you're right now, which was like perfect a year from now, right? Like you haven't really improved. So it's only natural. Yeah. So Daniel, I mean, we'll put everything in the show notes, but do you want to tell people where they could find you, where they could connect with you, listen to your thoughts?
Yeah. So probably the best place to reach me is on Twitter.
Okay.
That's where I probably hang out the most. So my username is at Daniel Teshny. And probably the only other one I'd mention, because it's sort of a landing page to everything else that I produce, is my blog. Which is blog.danielteshny.com. And if you go down to the very bottom of the blog page, there's a link to my GitHub. There's a link to my YouTube channel, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Happy for people to engage me on LinkedIn. I just try and not log into it all the time, as it's become a bit too Facebooky for me.
You know, people start posting their cute cat videos and, you know, kind of that's where you draw the line, huh?
I'm on certain mediums for a certain purpose. So I'm on LinkedIn to connect with people professionally, like network with people.
Yeah.
But not everyone uses Twitter, and Twitter's like a bit more informal. Like I'll be a little bit more, a bit more playful with my language, or as I said before, comment on the Carlton Football Club. you know, like a bunch of other stuff that I'm interested in. That's not just professional stuff. So yeah,
awesome, cool. Like we said, we're gonna have all the links in the show notes, as well as things we talked about. Daniel, it's been a pleasure. I really appreciate you coming on the show. I think our listener get a lot from just the content creation process itself. So thanks again for taking the time.
Thank you, Eric.
So thanks for listening to the Network Automation Nerds podcast today. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and all the other podcast platforms. Until next time, bye-bye.